Pues sí, creo. Yes.
How did you feel about playing abroad?
Oh, we were all geared up for it. It was a miserable wet night. We went late at night.
Just before we actually got down on the journey, had you been given a lead to try to go in?
Oh, yes, we were given a lead. And we'd had all our injections, you know, our tetanus antibody and what's the other one? Vaccination, sort of thing.
How did your mother take it that you were going off to France?
Well, they didn't show it, but they must have felt, you know, having to go away.
Do you recall the night that you moved?
Yes, it was a terrible, windy, wet night, awful night, and we marched down to Sunderland Station, and I had a carriage on my own with a sick chap, this Ernie Dolan, see. He was sick, and I had to look after him. And when we got down, we were a long time on the journey and fed, you know.
Were the civilians turned out to watch you marching off onto your...
Well, it was late at night.
Weren't
aware. It was supposed to be done secretly.
So you got on the train at Sunderland and then there?
To, well, past our own village, really. It doesn't exist now. The old Sunderland ferry head line, it used to come past fence houses, Hilton and that way. And you were looking out the train to see if there was anybody about, but it was late at night. And we just carried on through and ended up in the morning at Southampton. And from there, each battalion got on a separate boat to go to, with Royal Naval personnel, like, to go to France, to Le Havre.
Do you remember the name of the boat?
I can't really remember it now.
It must have been quite an adventurous thing.
It was. I mean, it was, because most of us had hardly been out of our own village. I mean, I'd been no further away than Leeds in Yorkshire, see, and I hadn't been into Scotland or the West Coast or anything like that. We had a very little area that we travelled in, because there was no holidays those days. It was a case of all you got off was one day on a weekend, if you were lucky. So it was a case of you hadn't seen much. Never been to London. So, anyway, we didn't even get to London that trip, because we bypassed London, got to Southampton, and we ended up in Le Havre.
The journey over, do you recall?
Pretty uneventful journey.
Under escort?
Yes, with naval escort. Pretty uneventful. I mean, the sea wasn't rough or anything like that. And I had this sick chap. And of course, when we had to land, I had to hump his blankets, my blankets, and his equipment. So I had to hand him over and then carry his stuff.
But what was wrong with
him? Well, I don't really know. He was just, I think he was under the weather.
What were your first impressions of France?
Well, just the big, like, Le Havre, big wayside, and of course seeing French, little French boats with a red, white and blue tricolour on, things like that. But you thought, oh, it's just much the same as the other side, sort of thing. Just the dockside workers and things like that. And of course, French writing up, you know, defense defumer instead of, and you, that was a bit strange, you know, everything is written in France, French. And then we got on to a train. Now we got on, not like in England, we got on to cattle trucks. So that was the general way that troops were moved about in Europe. And it had on, in French, 4 horses or 40 men. So the 4 horses were all right. They were thought more of than the men. Or you shoved 40 soldiers in there. Yes, well, we thought, it'll not always be like this, but it was. It was the general idea, you see.
Presumably the officers weren't.
Oh, no, they wouldn't. They would probably be in a little carriage up the front.
Was this in daylight?
Oh, daylight. Oh, yes. We'd travel through the night, you know, it was daylight in the morning.
Were there any French people there to see you arrive?
As I say, just the just the usual workers, dock workers.
So you got on the train, and where did you go then?
Well, we went to, I think it was, a place called Volbeck. See? Now, by that time, it had gone on, and the sun had gone out. And we were marching through this village with the band. And it was like a sunken road. And the houses high up on either side, you know. And the band was echoing, and the music was coming back. And on this wall overlooking, there was an old Frenchman, with his pipe, looking down. And I thought, I'll try with a bit French. And I said, "Bonjour, monsieur." He said, "Come over with the last load, kid." So, anyway, from then on, we went to a kind of a chateau in France, and we were sleeping in the stables. Mind, the marvelous stables, there must have been racehorses, because the actual stable where the horse was, all marble, and the drinking fountain was a lion's head. Really beautiful it was, and all oak fittings where they had the horse, the horse equipment.
What were you sleeping on?
Now, let's see. I just think we were sleeping probably in your ground sheet and a blanket on the floor. That's about
the floor.
No, just your ground sheet and a blanket on the floor.
And did you stay here any length of time?
Well, probably about a week or something.
Do you recall the name of the place?
Volbeck.
Volbeck.
Mm-hmm. I think it was.
That week would be your real introduction to France.
More or less, yes.
Did you get much opportunity to meet the French in the village?
Not at that time. And then we moved.
What were you doing in that room?
Just marching around the place, you know. And
were you still in the medical room?
No, not at that time. Yeah, more or less. Because
you back into the income? Back into the company?
Oh, yeah. We were always, yes. We were always D company. Then we moved, and I'm trying to think where we moved to. Back onto the old cattle trucks and moved somewhere else. And I remember there was a lot of French soldiers working on the railway. And some of the lads got great fun out shouting rude words to the French soldiers, and they didn't know what we're talking about, you know. And they thought it was great fun, that. And I'm trying to think where we went to. But we went quite a way into France. And while we were in this place, we were on doing these runways. You know, concrete and runways and things like that. That's right. And we were in tented accommodation. The same by the side of the road.
And what were you doing at the stage? What was your attitude to task?
Well, I was just one of the usual. You sleep in the tent, just the same as the others.
Doing heavy work.
No distinction at all. And oh yes, the engineers had some, but we were just more or less digging out places for them to lay the concrete, you know, laying concrete runways and things like that. And we used to get out at night down to this village. I'm hardly fucking think of it, what they call it. And at that time, you used to get paid about 5 shilling a week. Now, that gave you 50 francs. And you had enough there, if you were a moderate drinker, to get drunk every night out of that. And the cigarettes were duty free. See, you weren't badly off really like that. And you could go into any local farmhouse and get egg and chips for 1.50 francs. No, just a minute. Anyway, at the time, a franc was worth about tuppence or something. So it worked out, you were getting egg and chips for about 3 halfpence with a drink of coffee in our money. You know, it was, you were like the Americans when they came over here. You were pretty well off because the French were just paid in sous or pfennigs, or not pfennigs, but centimes.
Were the French friendly towards
you? Oh, yes.
Not
really, no bother at all. Anyway, we couldn't understand what they said most of the time. But I know when we were down in the town and you were coming back to where you were sleeping, all the daughters were shout calling. So if you were coming up.
So they kept pretty strict control on the daughters?
Oh, yes. You weren't going to get near the daughters. Wines, like a red wine and a white wine. It was the common drink of the French soldiers and everybody, you know.
But it was new to British soldiers.
Oh, yes, it was pretty cheap. You didn't buy beer or anything, you just bought this wine. And it sharp got to your head. And I was coming back from this town, and the other battalion was up the road, the 9th, or was it the 10th? They were up the road. And I looked around and I didn't recognize anybody, and it was getting near time to get back to camp. So there was some DLIs getting onto a truck. And I went and climbed onto this truck with them. And it was the other battalion, the 10th. And I said, yeah, well, how am I going to get? He said, well, we're passing your camp on the same road, we're passing it. We'll slow the lorry down when we get to the gate, you can jump off. Well, you climbed out the backboard and had the spare tyre laid underneath, and you could stand on that, see. And I said, we're coming up to the camp now. So I'm standing on this back tyre, and he said, all right. And he banged on the back of the driver's seat. He said, we've slowed up now. They were still doing about 30 when I hit the bottom. And I just rolled over, and my watch came out of my pocket, and it didn't break, surprisingly enough. And I just saw them. I think I was too drunk to it. I just fell, you know. And I got myself up and I was walking into the camp. And this officer came. He says, you, you, and you. He says, there's a bloke dropped off a truck. He says, come and get him in. I says, that was me. Anyway, it was all right. They got away with that.
Were there any problems with drunkenness in the village? Soldiers and civilians?
Not really, no.
They behaved themselves.
Oh, well. Yes. I never heard of any bad behaviour in Tekka.
See,
it was a novelty, really.
And you said the French were in that place very friendly to work.
More or less, aye. Well, because any little farmhouse set itself up as a cafe, and any British soldier would go in, get a meal, and they were up to any coppers they could get. And every group of troops that went in, they upped the prices with a new lot coming in. So good. Anyway, where do you go from here?
What time would the day start?
Well, Rivali, 6 o'clock. In the morning.
And washed and
washed and shaved, and yes, done.
What would be your first task after breakfast?
Your various duties, very good. You know, you go in squads to these airfields. Now, the trouble with that was we were working all day, and then the captain got a bee in his bonnet, or somebody had told him. Stand to and spend the night watching for parachutes drum. It wasn't giving you any rest at all. You're getting about 2 hours sleep a night. So actually, when we got to the front, we were out on our... We were without sleep.
So this was most nights, wasn't it?
Well, most nights... Before we went, yes. So we weren't actually getting any sleep at all. Very little.
And this was heavy physical work?
Oh, it could be, yes.
What was the weather like at that time?
Oh, it was lovely, lovely weather. And then we did get one heavy shower. And we were washed out of camp. And we had to spend the night in an old, unfinished house, French house. And that was the first introduction to army rum. Come round, you know, the lads getting wet and that.
So at least you knew with rum if the weather conditions were against you.
It was warm weather normally, but just we had a heavy downpour and we were washed out of camp. See, and we were digging trenches round for the water to run away, but eventually, it was so heavy downpour that we had to evacuate the camp.
What time did the day finish on the runways?
Well, it was supposed to finish about 6 o'clock at night.
But then you have these parachute alarms.
Yeah. Aye, but they would, you were more or less on your own till they'll get you up early morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that.
Was there any time for doing military training, usual preparation training for it?
No.
You didn't do it, you weren't doing anything?
Not really, at all.
That must have been some concern if you were thinking in terms of some time you won't meet the Germans. Here you are, being runaways.
We didn't think we would ever meet the Germans. We thought we were working behind the lines. That's right.
Who was the commander of the unit?
Well, he was a colonel. I can't remember his name now. I don't know whether it was Fawcett or Crawford or some name like that.
Do you recall what he was like as a commanding officer?
We didn't say much of him. And he was pretty liberal. And he was captured as well.
Your own unit, your own small unit, who commanded that?
Well, commanded by a captain, and he was Martin, Captain Martin, and he was Oliver Hardy, spitting image of him, with the little moustache and the fat face and that. And that's who he he's nicknamed him, you know.
What was he like as commanding officer?
Well, he didn't know a lot. I mean, he just had a little bit of officer training as after the war started, see? No, none of the officers had had much training. They were all new to it. And of course, when we were in France, the sergeants weren't much good with the maps. They had no idea reading a map, a French map.
I was going to ask you about the NCO. We were talking about the officers. Well, what were the NCOs like that were commanding you or in charge of you?
Well,
who were the men who were friends with because of civilian life?
Well, you knew them, of course. I lived in the same village and all the rest of it. But they weren't highly trained. See? They weren't very good at map reading and things like that.
Did you call any particularly?
No, not really.
What platoon? Do you recall the platoon you were in?
Oh, it was just the platoon who just numbered.
What number was yours?
Hanged if I remember, but I think it was just, there was 14, 15, 16, something like that.
And the men that were with you in the platoon, what were they like?
Oh, well, you got on very well with them, yeah.
And all quite happy in the condition they were in, the place?
Oh, yes. A lot of them were mostly ex-miners. See, they just, more or less, they drifted all the time, hadn't they?
So the heavy work made them used to.
Oh, they didn't mind, no. They didn't mind that at all.
Were there any bullies amongst the NCOs and officers in your own unit?
Oh, yes, some of them took advantage of their rank, you know. But it wasn't bad. No, not too bad. Because eventually, when we got out to France, in England, the sergeant major was a bit of a pig. But he was in the same boat as us. See, in the drill hall, he just used to pop through the door to his wife. He was living quarters. But in France, he was more or less, he felt like he was in the same boat, so he mellowed a bit.
Do you recall his name?
Hutchinson. Yeah.
So, actually, discipline in France would be easier than what was in England in the drill hall situation.
Well, yes, I suppose it was more innocent, because you're all away from home at the same time, you see, you're all in the same boat.
Were there any accidents in the working conditions that you were in?
No, there was no accidents or anything.
And I think you said the engineers were the, you were just laboring.
Exactly, aye. The engineers, well, they'd be working any equipment, you know, army equipment. But they didn't have a lot of equipment like the Americans had, you know. They weren't.
Did you see any German aircraft at all at this point in time?
Oh, the odd one used to come across, yes. Used to fly over the odd one, spotting us out. You could tell them, mind. You could hear them when we used to be out with the different tone of the engine, you know. Like a sort of broken beat, where our planes were different.
How long were you working in this particular area?
Well, it can't have been very long, I think, because we were only in France about 5 weeks altogether.
Did you move elsewhere from the aerodrome?
Yes, one night we had to go and move from this camp, and they were burying tins, and we got as much fuel as we could carry, and they were burying tins, and we were put on trucks, and we travelled all through the night to this place. I don't know where it was, but it must have been east of Arras, between Arras and Cambrai. But where exactly, I don't know. And I remember the last time before we got into this village, And I saw a DLI headstone of the First War, this person in his graveyard. And we start to dig ourselves in along a railway, but the French army was streaming past, throwing their weapons away, no toast. And they were coming up to us and saying, "Cat kilometre. Beaucoup blessé," you know, in French. We don't understand a bit of it. Tons of wounded. 4 kilometres. And we thought, oh, 4 kilometres, 4 miles, it's nothing like. It's only 2.5, isn't it? See? And we didn't realise. Couldn't twig on how near the Germans were. And at night time, the sky was lit up with these Veery lights and all the rest of it.
Can you call the dates?
Well, it must have been about 17th, 18th of June, round about that time.
Because the Germans obviously started their invasion early in May.
Oh, yes, yes.
And you were then being flown forward. Did they tell you where you were going and what you were going
to
make?
No, you were kept in the dark. And we saw, we thought, oh, the French army and the Belgian army's in front of us. But they were all damn well behind us. They'd all run away. So we got up to this village and they said, "Right, we're going back. So load up chaps under this wagon, under this army transport, and taking them back." Well, actually, they were taking them back to Arras. And we were midway between Arras and Cambrai. And there were 16 of us they couldn't take. So we said, "Right, find somewhere to sleep and we'll pick you up in the morning." Well, in the night, the Germans passed us. We didn't realise that.
And you were one of these 16?
One of the 16.
And where did you find to rest?
That was in this little village between Cambrai and Arras. And when we woke up in the morning and eventually looked round, the Germans had occupied the village. So we went into this little garden hut in the garden and we kept as quiet as we could. We said, "In the night, in the dark, we'll try and get out." So the next thing we knew, the Germans were searching the village, and they went into the house that this had belonged to. The French had gone. They'd even locked the well and gone. That was a common thing, locking the wells up when they left. What good that did, really, because could you shoot the lock off? But, right, the Germans are searching the house. Keep dead quiet. They came up to have a look in this shed we were lying in, and one of the blokes coughed. The German just turned around, went back, says, "Right, what will happen? They'll just throw some hand grenades in here through the night." So there was no way out the back. It was about as high as this room wire around the back. No way out the back. We had to come into the main street of this village. And of course, that's it. So the only thing was for the officer to go and surrender.
So in your 16, you were still under an officer. There was an officer there with you.
There was an officer there with us.
Do you remember his name?
No, I can't. I can't exactly remember his name now.
But at this point in time, had the opportunity to fire a shot at the Germans at any time coming up into the line?
No, we never seen any Germans. See?
So they suddenly appeared when you were in this hut?
Yes, and bypassed us in the night. So what they did, they didn't come back for us in the morning. So we had a canny feed with what the sergeant major was kind of bag of provisions, had a canny feed. And the sergeant major was Hutchinson. I remember him. Our own sergeant major. And then, of course, we had to go and surrender the job. And that's when we threw our bolts away. And you took your cap badges out and you hid them in the stove, in the hut, so they wouldn't know what regiment you were.